Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettiner, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society, to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Roman Roth, the winemaker for the Wolford Vineyard. And I'm going to be chatting with him in a minute about the work he does. But before I do, I would like to let everyone know that he just became an American citizen. And I wondered if you would tell us, first of all, where are you from? Rome?
Why? I put on my best Long Island accent.
Germany.
Germany originally, that's right.
One question I have about that is Roman a common name in Germany? I know it would be in Italy.
Well, Roman Herzog was a president and minister president and whatever, a couple of people who are Roman. It was the nickname of my father, which was Remigius Roth, and that was difficult to pronounce. So when he did his apprenticeship, the owner of the business called him, nicknamed him Roman, and that stuck.
What was the business your father was in?
He was also a winemaker, a cooper, a barrel maker and winemaker, then later a wine merchant. I grew up with the bottle, basically.
Tell me about the experience. Where did you go to become an American citizen since you've been here for a long time?
Yeah, I've been here 33 years. Took only 33 years to become American. I had a green card from the beginning, so it all worked out okay. And, well, my wife became American in 2003. And then this was, we could adopt our daughter at the time. So she chose to do American citizenship. And then our daughter obviously was an American to bring her back here from Sri Lanka. So I was the only holdout and things were busy. And I just somehow, just never happened. And finally, you feel like when you're this many years here, you're an expat and you're neither here nor there.
Where did you go? Was this an Islip?
It's an Islip. It was a very easy process already when I renewed my green card, like maybe 8 years ago, which was already a little thing. It took forever to get the green card to come back. And, you make business plan, your business trips and everything, and you can't really book because, it's the green card coming. So it was something, this is getting a little funny. What happens if you wouldn't get your green card? Could you imagine? So in any case, and when I did the renewal there, they said, why don't you apply for American citizenship? It would be so easy. You would have it in no time. And that planted the seed also. And so finally, then during COVID, nothing happened and it was difficult to organize things. And finally, this year on June 27th, I sent my application in and it happened very quickly. So by December, I just got my passport last week, actually. And so now I'm American and can vote and can be part of the American dream.
Did you go to an assembly? Was a group of you that became American citizens or was it an individual situation?
No, it was a huge group of 150 people, I would say, from 32 different countries, because the judge, which was interesting, he walked in and said, normally I'm the bankruptcy judge of Suffolk County, but I do this on the side, so not to be deterred by this. But in any case, he had everybody stand up, every different country. So he knew what countries are people from. So he would say Colombia and, 40 people got up, and then Germany, 2 people got up. And from 32 different countries. So that was a really nice ceremony. And it felt somber and it felt everybody was emotional quite a bit. And at first, sometimes it's just another thing you think, but it actually does go under your skin.
Did you have to pledge of allegiance?
We made the pledge of allegiance. There was definitely, it was very formal. So he gave a great speech of, how well, that it's not easy to come to this country and what an honor it is. And people come before you and who have come before and whatever made America great. And so it was very nice and emotional.
You have to sing a song like Star Spangled Banner.
I was ready to belt the Star Spangled Banner, but they didn't let me.
Well, so you've been the winemaker for 25 years, 30 years now.
33 harvests, 33 years.
And many awards to the wines that have come through, and you're very celebrated for the work you do. Tell me how you said you were, but you were raised with it. So, and how did you get in touch with, I guess it was Christian Wolfer?
It's a nice story. I mean, my father wanted that I become a banker, but you can't sing in a cubicle, but you can sing in a wine cellar. So I preferred this line of work. And I mean, there was other options to become a chef or a stained glass maker. But luckily, I chose winemaking. And I always loved it how wine was revered in my family when they opened the 76 Baronhaus Lese, some special wine. It was like a baby was held. And so I was like, well, it would be pretty cool to make wine, you know, if wine is so celebrated. And then at 16, I started an apprenticeship system where you go 1 month to school, 3 months you work. This goes for 3 years. And then you go through that. And finally, I did my master degree in 1992. I had to have 5 journey years where I worked in America at the time, in California for a short time, and met my wife at the time. Then I worked in Australia at Rosemount Estate, which was super interesting and got me away from Riesling, you know, just to see other things. And especially in the new world that you realize, boy, this is all possible and you don't have concrete boots of tradition on, you know. So it was very interesting. In any case, Christian, one of my last couple of days before the master school was over, my master class, making my master in wine making, enology and distilling. There was one of the professors walked around, hey, there's a job offer in New York. And I thought, huh? Well, I was already on my way to Australia, where my wife is from. And we had already a welcome party organized, boxes were sent, my car was sold. In any case, I thought, well, let me call up America. Most Australian wine is sold in England or in America at the time. You always learn something. So, well, after the secretary, there was a German guy answering, Christian Wolfer, so I didn't practice any English, but got into German. Then he told me that Manhattan is half an hour away from the Hamptons, which is a little stretch of the truth, but it worked. And anyway, a week later, he came to Germany. We had a great meeting there. And well, we called Australia and said, we're going to go to America first for a couple of years. And we came here and well, 33 years later, I'm still here.
Did you ever originally think you might be a winemaker in Germany?
Yes, definitely. I was on my way there. And in Germany, very early, when you make a decision, you stick to it. You're already at school. You go to a math school or you go to a language school type of thing in gymnasium or high school. So you're already making some decisions very early. And finally, when you do make a training for your job, most people stick to it. There's not this flexibility as here.
Well, why did you? Why didn't you stick with it? Why did you just choose to? Do you like the world?
Because I met my wife. We had this fabulous trip to America at the time, which was just wild. For 4 months, traveling through the United States, working in California at Sainsbury Estate in the Carneros, in Sonoma, in Carneros. Anyway, it opened up the world, and then later I went to Australia and worked there, and just you could realize, hey, I can make wine anywhere. You don't have to be just stuck. I mean, in my family, we didn't have a vineyard, so I would have had to work in another region like the Rheingau, which is like, you know, 4 hours away from my hometown in the Black Forest. So it would have been, I would have been anyway, not, you know, being stuck in my village type of, say, my hometown of Rottweil. But
you would have been stuck in there, wouldn't you?
Well,
what one was it?
This was, well, I came in 1992 in August. We came here to America, made the first wine here, 3,000 cases, and was in the world one of the worst years of history. You know, probably the years. It was the year of 13 rainy weekends. And if you rent in the Hamptons, you know, everything gets judged by rainy weekends. So it was not an easy year, but we made actually lovely wine. And it was the start of our rosé. We made 82 cases of rosé. Now we make over 100,000 cases rosé, just rosé alone. Now it's quite has been a journey, quite amazing, from coming from nowhere where people didn't want to touch Long Island wine with a stick, to now being, celebrated and selling in 37 states and 13 countries, and it's been quite a change over the years.
What do you attribute that to?
Consistency that we've made, everybody can make good wine in a good year, but we really pride ourselves of making great, diff really good wines in the difficult years. And I think people has, have, well, what you buy, you buy what makes you happy and what you trust. And some in a bottle makes people happy, and you can trust the quality. Now people buying even the wine without even tasting, like, restaurants or liquor stores. Normally you have to go there, you have to sample, you have to tell them about the vintage. Hey, new vintage, just send me 10 cases. It's like really has been a big change.
When you first got here, I'm trying to remember, the Hargraves had chosen the North Fork as a place you could have a vineyard, instead of a potato field, because we were all on potatoes at that time, and they proved themselves correct over the objections of some of the potato farmers. And how far along was the North Fork when you got here?
I want to say there were 13 wineries, maybe on the North Fork, and down here there was Bridgehampton Winery and Wilford and Sag Pond Vineyard at the time it was called, because Christian didn't realize how great the potential is. So the original name was Sag Pond Vineyard, which then, once he saw that we got into all the 4-star restaurants in New York, Daniel, Jean-Georges, L'Espinasse, La Caravelle, and Le Bernardin at the time, and then he changed. Well, I want my name on the label, so voila, it turned into Wilford Estate. But it was fledgling. It was tiny. It was, certainly very difficult to sell wine at the time.
Have you tried the different kinds of grapes, or to find the one that would be best, or several? How does that work?
Well, what? Well, we pride ourselves on Long Island that we have all vinifera wines, the classic European grape varieties like Merlot, Chardonnay, Cab Franc. So that's quite different to, upstate, where there is still also hybrids. They have make great vinifera wines there too, but they have a lot of hybrids as well. So we didn't have hybrids here. So it made us instantly a serious region. Then the climate is fabulous in the Hamptons. We're the last area in New York State to get a frost. So if you have no frost in the fall, you can and have green leaves, great canopy, you have photosynthesis till the end of October, which is a very long hang time and helps us to ripen wonderful fruit, red wines, for example. Long Island makes some of the best red wines on the East Coast, and if not in America. As a result, we're on the same latitude as Madrid and Naples, so we're much further south than French vineyards or German vineyards. So great sun. So the painters always talk about the sunlight. It's certainly good for grapes and ripening seeds and ripening skins of the grapes. So it's a great conditions here. But again, we make elegant wines. We have the Atlantic. And that it was the tricky part at the time. People wanted big fat Chardonnay and big fat, cough syrup red wines, basically. But we make elegant wines because we capture this Atlantic sea breeze and have more balance and have, more lighter, less alcohol. So, but this is what's now much more favorable, less alcohol and more elegant wines. And people eat three vegetables and a tiny piece of protein instead of a monster steak. And this is where Long Island wines shine.
What do you mean by that? How does it enhance that more?
Well, it's like when you squirt a piece of lemon on your fish, or you want a little bit of freshness on your dish, and that's what a wonderful elegant wine does. It keeps your cleanses your palate. You can it cuts right through the fat of duck or of salmon, let's say, and so it gives you a more balanced and a more elegant meal. And if you have a whole night of, dinner, like six, four, five course meal or something, you want to start. It's fine that the last wine could be some heavy, big monster. Which is you slowly graduating up to that, but at the beginning you want to start with light and elegant.
Have you ever thought to go back, or have you been back to your homeland to visit?
Well, I go every year. I never left Germany because I didn't like it. It was just one of these things that called me here, and who knew that this would last this long and be such a success. So I go home. I love my family very big. I have 29 cousins on my mother's side and 26 cousins on my father's side, and we are close with all of them, actually. So I love to go home. I'm going this February home for we're the first winery to invite first East Coast winery to be invited for the Rheingau Gourmet Wine and Food Festival. So I'm very proud of that. So I'm going there to represent us and show Wülfer wines. So that will be an exciting trip. And so yeah, I go home a lot, and it's part of the fun traveling, of course.
Tell me a little bit about your family and where you settled out here.
Well, we settled on my wife Dushi, who was born in Sri Lanka, but they immigrated to Australia when she was 13 years old, her parents, and she became a doctor. So she's the doctor and I make the medicine, I always say. And she was game enough to come along to New York. And she actually, it was funny at the time, because Christian, we had some interviews, and Christian was, of course, an interesting man. How would I recognize you at the airport? And he said, "Oh, easy. I'm tall, blonde, and good looking." I said, "Who talks like this?" So my wife said, "I'm coming along. If we're making such a decision, I need to meet this guy too." So we went to Stuttgart Airport. We met him. It was 8 o'clock in the morning, and he said, "Well, where should we go?" And he said, "Oh, I want a drink." I said, "What do you want to drink? It's 8 o'clock. Nothing is open." But luckily, I had made a wine. It was for my wedding, a Pinot Blanc that was barrel fermented, and I thought, well, I wanted to show this American man that I can make classic style, elegant style, barrel fermented wines like the French, and not just, let's say, German fruity wines. So I came to my interview with a bottle. Of course, my mother, who was also a larger than life person, she said, "Well, if you're going with a bottle, you need to have a cheese platter with you." So she had a cheese platter for me. So you can imagine that was the interview, and the rest is history, basically. It went very well. Anyway, we came here with two bags, four bags, I think, and a guitar, and we settled here in Sagaponack in one of Christian's houses. Actually, it wasn't even ready, so we first had to go to East Hampton to a beautiful pond cottage on Georgica L Beach on what's the Lily Pond Lane. So we should have never moved from there, I think. But in any case, it was a great start to, get into East Hampton. I joined the East Hampton St. Luke's choir at the time, and me instantly made very good friends for life. And well, slowly that's how the roots go down. Then I came back to Sagaponack. Love Sagaponack, of course, the rural part. Being on the farm was great for my wife too, because there was always activity. There was every all the time party. Either Christians had a party or we had a party. Sometimes people would wander from one party to the next, to the other side party, when we were like, whatever, 3 minutes from his house, or 2 minutes from his house, 1 minute from his house. So it was a great place to start this all. And then finally in 2000 we bought a house in Sag Harbor, which is our home. And Sag Harbor is the other beautiful town in the Hamptons, of course, real place. And so it's a lovely place to live. And it's a long island, of course. It takes a while to get off the island. That's the only little negative thing. But other than that, the ocean and the proximity to Manhattan is still great.
Well, thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you at one of those sunsets that we have.
Well, I appreciate you have been a fantastic support of all these years. I mean, we're one of the first people, yeah, we certainly with the media, I mean, Dan's paper would write about our vineyard, which nobody would write about Wolf or about Long Island wineries, and you did. And it certainly helped to pave the way for what's here and what's still to come. Thank you.
Sure. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Great. Bye-bye, everybody.